Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Well, well, well. Welcome back to Early Work. This is the second episode in the series of lost episodes. Another one recorded in, I believe, March 2021. Such a long time. Almost 2 years to wait before it came out. But, you know, you've got to let these things percolate and marinate. Percolate's the wrong word, isn't it? Bad podcast to get wrong words like that. Is percolate even a word? I think I learned that from the OC. The point is, this is a great episode. It's with Lucy Beaumont. Before we get into that, though, I do have a couple of plugs to get through. I'm currently on tour, if you're interested. It's mostly sold out, but there's a few dates available, particularly in the north of England, Northallerton, Hexham, Barnard Castle, the classics. There's some tickets left there. It's not a humiliating amount sold, so it will still be a fun gig, even if only you bought a ticket listening now. Look, I've chosen the Lucy Beaumont episode to plug the Northern dates on purpose, all right? I'm assuming there's going to be a bit of a Northern uplift with this one. Come along to those shows. Hull is sold out, actually, just on the subject of Lucy Beaumont. Hull is sold out. So not doing too badly in the North. Second plug is, I have a new podcast called Fit and Proper with comedian Lloyd Griffith. He was meant to do this podcast, and then all of his early work was lost in a flood, genuinely. His attic flooded. How does an attic flood? How does an attic flood? It's up high. Anyway, that's the point of a lighthouse. Well, actually, it isn't the point of a lighthouse, Reese. Christ. Anyway, Fit and Proper is a podcast where comedians come on and take over a football club of their choice and then redesign it in their image and do whatever they like. You don't have to like football to like it. It's very silly. For example, Sarah Keyworth, she put a big Go Ape above the stadium for all the fans who got bored watching the match. They could go do a big Go Ape with a lovely bird's eye view. Nathan Caton put a big bee's nest above the away fans to be vaguely threatening. Been loads of good guests. Loads of good guests coming up. So check it out. Go check out that podcast if you like. Now, in the meantime, Lucy Beaumont is here on Early Work from her rough Hull school where you've got to be tough. But she somehow managed to make it as a little crow's mate, an agony aunt. She has one of the most ridiculous would I lie to you level anecdotes of all time in this about a taxi driver that I'm sure you'll enjoy very much. And then a lot of actual work all to do with her mate Claire, her collaborator. They worked together on poetry. She wrote a touching poem for her when she was heartbroken. She threw her a secret house party. And then, genuinely, Lucy's closing poem on this is one of the most beautiful things I've ever heard. But the build-up to all of it, i.e. the rest of the episode, is absolutely batshit. Enjoy! Joining me this week on another episode of Early Work is the incredible Lucy Beaumont. Welcome to the show, Lucy.
Hello. Hello, thank you for having me.
Are you excited, nervous?
Indifferent, really.
Yeah, fair enough.
Do you know what helps? Enough. Is because I can see you.
That helps the indifference, does it?
Well, it helps me feel more relaxed. I can actually see you, yeah.
For those of you who don't know, by the way, any listeners, Lucy Beaumont is probably best known for when we recorded an episode of Pointless Celebrities together. But how did you feel about it at the time?
Do you know, well, I do have anxiety, but I've got nice anxiety where I don't want to get rid of it. I like it, do you know? Mm. I'm comfortable with it. It's part of who I am. But I didn't say hello to you when we was walking down the stairs. Cindy, they were talking to me and I knew, I clocked you and I thought I must say hello to him, and then I forgot and then it really bothered me and I to be honest, I think that's what put me off my game, I didn't do very well.
I thought you were trying to psych me out when you didn't say hello, me. I thought you were trying to get in my head, but actually it messed your game up.
Yeah, oh well, I was thinking maybe you didn't notice. Some people
I didn't. I'll be honest, I didn't notice. But I find it very sweet that you worried about that afterwards.
Yeah.
Also, crucially, I mean, something to address here. I was wearing a tuxedo at the time.
Oh, maybe it was that. Maybe I just thought, oh, God, he looks so
Can't
flat.
Say hello to him. He's trying to look at him. He's a mess. I wore a tuxedo. Me and Lloyd Griffith, who was my team member, wore tuxedos on that show. And we had it almost. We wore tuxedos kind of as a prank that got out of hand. I was trying to prank Lloyd by saying, let's wear tuxedos on Pointless. And then I was going to turn up not wearing a tuxedo. And Lloyd would look like an idiot. But then the day before the record, Lloyd sent me a picture of him wearing the tuxedo. And I thought, God, he looks fantastic. I want to wear a tuxedo. So I got one as well. And then we developed like a little skit we could do when Alexander Armstrong goes, oh, you're very smart. And then we thought, oh, we could do a bit of back and forth. And we'll like almost script a little bit of banter we can do. Didn't come up. No one mentioned it.
Did you mention tuxedos?
I think I brought it up eventually. We didn't do the little skit, but it was like, I think there was one point where I said, sorry, Alexander, I am wearing a tuxedo or something like that. But God, did you find it weird on that Pointless how when we got knocked out, you actually just you go home. Like, I was like, this is a celebrity version. I'm with a bunch of comics. We're all friends. I thought we'd at least be able to sit over there and watch the rest of the show.
I know.
They just went, get out.
And my car was waiting for me.
Yeah, they were just like, you actually get ushered out of the studio.
I know. I think I was in that because I think we can say, can't we, I got knocked out after the first question. I think in total I was there from start to finish about 25 minutes.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it took me 3.5 hours to get there. I come from the Halifax.
Oh, God, that is so brutal. Now, Lucy, if I had to guess what you were like at school, and I do because it's the first format point of the show, I found this very difficult. So I always write this in advance, and I've got a good track record of getting this pretty creepily accurate. Right. I found this difficult because, and I don't know if you've been told this before, but you are quite enigmatic. Well, a good example is you refuse to say hello to people that you've known for years and worked with many times. I want to say that you wandered around school in a sort of world of your own, unfazed by all the chaos of the playground. But I am aware that your onstage persona is just that, is a persona, which makes me think, knowing that you have a character, that you sort of actually speak like this, like you're one of those actors who you'll just do this character for ages and then like in 30 years on This Is Your Life reboot, we'll find out, well, all along I was just playing this role or something like that. But in general at school, I think you're probably, I've gone with medium popular. I reckon you weren't putting yourself out there that much. So like you couldn't really be disliked because you weren't doing anything. It's like, not that you weren't doing anything, I think you weren't like... School's all about opinions and like towing the line, isn't it? Of like, we all like the same thing. And if you think this is cool or this is lame, then you're a loser or you're also cool. But I just reckon you were so solo in you were like that and you weren't saying any of them, that you were fine, except with acting, where I reckon you put yourself out there and I think you probably thrived in school plays and extracurricular drama, and you were always main parts and just a billion times better than anyone else doing stuff. You sort of strike me as the sort of person who might have developed or at least used a secret language to not be detected by teachers when you were having conversations. I can imagine you writing the names of people you fancied on your exercise book or pencil case, but not their real name, a sort of pseudonym or nickname that you would have made up that only you knew. I reckon you got into trouble for stuff you didn't realize you were doing, like back chat, where you would ask something you were genuinely curious about, but you'd accidentally poke such a hole in a teacher's logic that they would get angry. I also, and I hope this isn't an insane thing to say, can picture you holding a Bacardi Breezer at a party. And reckon you got you had a few never drink again, sleeping on the bathroom floor type evenings before other people did. Is any of this correct? Judging by your face, I'm guessing no.
No, this is totally fucked up. Like, you have just absolutely, like, you've just nailed, like, freakishly, like, to the dot, named, that's exactly what, how are you?
Oh, is it? Oh, right. I thought you were looking at me like, the hell do you think I am?
I don't mean this. I am genuinely gobsmacked. Because
good.
That is
because
so
some people
accurate.
Come on here and I get it bang on and they don't even care. But it's good. I'm so glad
no,
that you...
No, this has got... No, I mean this. You are in the wrong job.
You no. are. It's not the first time someone's told me that.
No, you could be the next Derek Akara.
You're not dead. Doesn't he contact the dead? You're alive and well. I'm just having a conversation with you.
Why aren't you? Because if you can do that, because that's what it is.
Talk us through it. So in what way, what bits were bang on and how accurate were they really? So to
it's
start off...
Because I'll have friends, I've got friends from school who are going to listen to this because they know it's about, you know, and they're going to be blown away because, like, they were there. Everything you said, I was medium popular, but I was liked by everybody. I never got, my school was very average, well, average school for Hull, which I now know isn't average for nationally. So actually, for most people, my school would have been seen as, like, really, really rough. Whereas actually, in Hull, it was quite nice, because it was just a bit outside of Hull. It was, like, in a place called Hesel. But it was, like, it was quite, like, you would get beaten up. Like, there was a lot of school fights, and you to be in the popular group, you had to be hard. You know, it was all about who's the cock of the school.
Oh, okay,
rather
right.
Rather than, like, who's got a swimming pool or, you know.
Yeah.
And what happened, because I'm 5'1" now, but I was tiny. I was so tiny when I started secondary school. And what happened on one of the first weeks of school was one of the older girls from, like, year 11, who was, like, broody because she was about to be pregnant, you know, she was going to get pregnant at 15. There was a group of girls that's what they were going to do. They knew they were going to get pregnant and they were going to get a council house and be perfectly happy. And
yeah,
one of them, I remember walking to school and it was like, you know, like a crow snatches something or a seagull. She sort of snatched me because I was like 3 foot or something. She like snatched me and was like, "You're going to be man now." And she put me on her hip and she treated me like her baby.
So if you're saying she's like a seagull, in this you are a chip. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, totally. And then, like, because she was, like, she was, like, in her year, the hardest girl in her year, you know, like, who nobody mess with. And, like, I was like her, oh, what do you call it? I mean, I was her soft toy, basically. Like, and so I was her baby. And so what she used to do is put me on her lap, you know, when she talked to all her mates and they'd all, like, smoke and stuff, like, at the back of school. And I'd just be sat there on her knee. But it also, like, it sent signals to the rest of them that, like, you know, I
don't
was a bit untouchable. I was a little bit untouchable. Yeah. And, like, now I know it sounds mad, but I've watched, like, gangster films and, like, a similar thing happens, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was going to say, have you seen Tom and Jerry? Because there's a big bulldog in Tom and Jerry that protects Jerry. because Jerry's a little mouse, and obviously Tom is the cat who's trying to kill Jerry. And then there's big bulldog who every now and then protects Jerry. It's good references, isn't it, that you go, yeah, it's like in gangster films. And I'm like, yeah, have you seen any cartoons? Because I don't understand what you're talking about. But yeah, it is. And it's something that's referenced. I always picture Richard Hammond when I think of that little bully's mate. You know what I mean? It's always like,
I think... That's just you all over it. I don't even I think it might be. That doesn't surprise me. You picture Richard Hammond. Do you picture Richard Hammond in a lot of situations?
Yeah, I mean, it's whenever I'm trying to picture anything, whenever I'm trying to imagine context for anything, I think, well, can I imagine Richard Hammond? Like, if I'm looking at a house, I imagine what Richard Hammond would do to the house. And then I go, yeah, that is a good house, actually. I'll buy that. No, I just think, I mean, I had a similar vibe, actually. I wasn't dissimilar. I didn't get picked up and just swept up by it. I think it, as a survival instinct, I definitely took a, these are the hardest boys in school. I'm going to be their little sidekick. Whereas yours was by accident. You just got swept up by a swooping crow.
I got swept up, and then that only lasted because then they left because she was year 11. And then I was in the top sets, you know, so in my top sets for English, everything else was... Not I want that grit, but in our school, if you were seen to be bright, you were instantly a target. It was really looked down on, and it makes me sad now looking back that it was so cool not to learn, you know. And there would be lessons there'd be lessons I'd want to engage with, but I didn't want to get picked on, so I had to. But also, I used to find it hard not to stop talking, so I also used to get told off. But I definitely think I felt like I was more of a geek, you know. But the group I had of friends were, it was so lovely, you know. They were sort of like, and it sounds awful because you think, what if they're listening, there was a proper a nerdy group that actually even I couldn't identify with them because I tried to make conversation with them and I couldn't.
Why? Because they were talking about like intellectual stuff, or just because different interests?
It's such a social awkwardness that there was nothing.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
There was nothing there. And so I was like the level up from them, and so our level, we would flip between sometimes hanging around with rougher people, and then sometimes hanging around with nicer people. But I'm really glad the friendship group I had, because they were really such lovely people, really good, warm-hearted people. I think I had a good innings at school. I think I was lucky. And then when I remember, because I was seen as being quite emotionally intelligent, and I think a lot of comedians have said this about being at school. I was like a listener. I used to listen. I was an agony aunt, and I was an agony aunt to like all the real popular kids as well. They'd come and tell me their problems. And I remember I spent a lot of time singing, you know, Pocahontas, that come run the hidden pine trails. Spent a lot of time.
Now we're getting some references I could understand. The Disney version? Yes, I do know it.
Spent a lot of that time on the playground singing that into people's ears. Like, they'd come over, like, you know, they'd just been in a school fight, and then they'd come over and say, can you sing Pocahontas to me?
What are you talking about? I mean, how is this possibly... How did that happen at school? This is a school, you told me, where in order to survive, you had to be the hardest person in school. That's the way you got any kind of respect at your school, was to be tough, okay? It was nothing about intelligence or anything like that. And yet, people would come over to you and say, soothe me with the sounds of Pocahontas, whenever they'd been in a scrape.
Yeah, but this is you know, how people have still got soft, you know, vulnerable sides.
So when you say you were like an agony aunt, was this just a situation where they would just come and find you in the playground and go, I don't know what to do about this? Or you didn't have like a setup where it would be like Lucy's agony aunt, and then it would be like in the library, or like it was like, I don't know, just on a certain bench, and just like every day between the hours of 12:30 and 1:30, she's available for your advice, get in the queue. And then if it all goes badly and she can't give you advice, she will sing you a lovely song quietly.
It was a bit more relaxed, yeah. It was just like I was seen as somebody you could tell your troubles to.
Right. Well, I didn't manage to predict that, but so what we've gone through is the medium popular was correct, and then I sort of said not putting yourself out there that much, but I guess the agony aunt thing, there's an element of that. Acting, I went big on the prediction of acting. I said you did school plays, extracurricular drama, and you were main parts.
Not
is this correct?
Plays. Our school, the point at which I was at our school, I now know as an adult, it was in a pretty bad way. I don't think a lot of teachers wanted to be there. So there was no school plays. There was no drama.
Right.
I think they've started it now. And when just as we was leaving, they got a drama teacher, which was a shame. But there was no joy or creativity. It was. Have you seen? You know that that film about what is it called? About he's got a bed. He's got a big bed.
He's got a film about he's got a big bed.
A kid who's got a big bed.
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
No, not Big Bed. Big Bed.
Oh, right. Sorry.
Bird.
I don't know.
Kestrel for the Nerve was the book. Kez. Have you seen Kez?
Oh, right. Yeah. Of course. Sorry. Yeah.
You know, have you seen Kez?
Film that he's got a big bird. Yeah. Again, I thought Big Bed.
Have you seen the PE scene with Kez?
Yes.
Well, that was my school.
Right, okay. Good God.
So there was no, there was no expressive arts. But what I did, me and my friend, we did drama outside of school. So I did a GCSE drama. I did it outside of school at a theatre company. I started offering GCSE drama. And I went there from being a kid. And it was a real lifesaver for me. I absolutely loved it. And I met so many great people. So anyway, it's a bit boring, but answer to your question. Yeah, I did. I did drama plays and was really, confident in being in productions.
And did you get big, were you getting the big parts?
I was getting the big roles, yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry, that's an actor. Yeah, that's someone who knows the title of the book of more than they know the title of a film. That's, that's pretty premium stuff. And I mean, you're obviously not going to answer this because you have any kind of modesty, but I did say you were a billion times better than anyone else at the drama and you would consider that. You don't have to answer, but is that correct?
I was.
Yeah, okay, good.
I don't know what happened, but at some point as I got to an adult, I stopped being the best at it. It's like people overtook me. It took me a lot because I went into acting and it's taken me a really long time to admit to myself I'm just not as good as I thought I was. Do you know what it is? I'm not versatile. And I got
right.
Just before, whilst I was, doing stand-up, but it was the last straw really where I thought you've got to stop going to auditions. I went, I got a really big audition for a film with Johnny Depp and they'd said they'd been watching my stuff and they knew so much about me and they couldn't find this character for, I can't remember what film it was, and they said, can you just do like just quite an RP, just quite a generic RP voice? And I sounded demented. And I knew as I was doing it. And so they said...
So my guess that your real voice is very posh and this is all fake is not true, right? Or are you that committed? Are you this committed to your lifelong character that you will sabotage an audition for a Johnny Depp film just because you don't want people to find out yet?
And then...
How do you feel? How would you feel about us, about me giving you a sentence to say in your RP accent?
You're welcome to.
Okay. Could you say... in your accent, a crow swooped down and then put me on her knee while she smoked.
A crow swooped down and put, what did you say?
And then put me on her knee while she smoked.
And then put me on her knee as she smoked.
it definitely works, but it sounds like, you sound like you're doing tube announcements. You know, I sort of expect you to say, the next station is Willesden Green in that voice.
The next station is Willesden Green.
Yeah, there you go. That's good. Well, you can't get in a Johnny Depp film, but you could get a job as the tube announcer. There's got to be cash in that.
I know. And then I had to... So then they said, well, a northern, like, but not like with a dialect, just like a And I couldn't do, and I explained to him I could only do a West Hull accent. I can't even do an East Hull.
How do they feel about that in Hollywood? I presume this is a big Hollywood film.
Mm.
How would they feel about that being like interpreted globally and in it by Americans?
Yeah, they said people wouldn't be able to understand you.
Okay, so is anything else that I predicted? So we, I sort of said you developed or used a secret language. What were we thinking there? Like, is it to avoid detection in conversations with teachers, or maybe like wrote people you fancied on an exercise book, but kind of nicknames you'd made up for them that they didn't know about.
Yeah, but how have you got to this point? Like, how are you able to be this?
Is that true?
Yeah, everything you've said is freaky. Have you like talked to people? Is that what you, is that
no,
partly what you
I
do?
Genuinely just I just guess. I've you know, I've seen a lot of your work. I know you. And I just think about it. It's just, honestly, I think anyone could really do this. If you actually just think about it, then you can just probably, you can get a pretty accurate guess most times. And I mean, to be honest, that is very specific, isn't it? But you just strike me as the sort of person who would want to avoid detection.
But why don't you use these skills for the occult?
I know, I really should. I really should be doing this. Or just tell, because people don't really have any self-awareness and know what they're like. I should just do that, shouldn't I? I should just have a job telling people what they're like. And just go, no, in the reality is, you're this person. And then they can go, oh, thank you. I don't need to find myself. I just need to do early work.
Yeah.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Okay, so it's fascinating to me that we got the prediction right. What I'm interested in is that you say that it was a school that was devoid of joy and creativity and encouragement for that sort of thing. So what sort of creative stuff were you writing in your own time? Was there, were you?
Just poems, just my Claire, who was my best friend, she's got a really good voice, and she got me into, what she used to do is like put on, you know, like Step, do you remember Steps?
Yeah.
I put on like a Steps cassette and sing to it, and that would be like what she'd do, you know. And so I used to do it with her, and we used to like listen to really emotional songs together and talk about like what they reminded of us of, and we used to like write poems together, and we became inseparable, where we were sleeping at each other's houses like nearly every night. It was our emotions were quite raw, and the people we went, because I didn't get a boyfriend till later on. That's because I didn't really like blossom, you know. I was seen as quite babyish. So the first boyfriend I got was like, you know, we'd nearly left almost, you know, in the last year of school. But the boyfriends we had, we were so passionate about, and we had so much raw emotion for that it was almost like overwhelming. So we had to like sing songs together in harmony about the boys we loved. To listen to music that, you know, and write poetry to really be able to cope with our feelings.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd associate Steps with that. I mean,
yeah, two for sorrow, it is one, because that was that.
Right. Okay. Yeah, maybe I don't know the back catalogue enough. And it was always Steps, or were there other people?
Shania Twain, particularly that one. See the pyramids along the Nile. What, you know that one? See the pyramids along the night. It's actually a really old song, but she re-released it, put fresh vibes in it, you know.
So you were, Shania Twain. So did you have dances to Shania Twain songs?
Don't know. We used to just sit on the carpet and listen to it.
Yeah. What about the other, what about the sort of more upbeat Shania Twain songs that are sort of a bit more girl powery?
Toni Braxton was a massive one for me.
Right, of course. That makes sense now.
Do you remember that? Don't leave me in all this pain. Don't leave me out in the rain. Come back and bring back my heart. Unbreak my heart. Say you love me again.
Yeah, of course. For me, it was Stop Crying Your Heart Out by Oasis. When I was rejected by a girl in year seven, I listened to that on a loop and felt extremely sorry for myself. Weirdly, Shania Twain was a big part of my childhood as well, because my dad was obsessed with her and used to play Shania Twain a lot on car journeys. He was always playing. He loved Shania Twain. He would always play Shania Twain. Really weird. So you and my dad, you know, probably process your emotions in the same way. He stays over at his mate's house all the time writing poems as well. He still does. No, of course not. So you would both write poems. Would the poems be on... Would you like... I'm just trying to imagine it. So you're staying over, you're having a fun time, you're coming up with your little, you're doing your, learning your dances, you're singing your songs, quite quietly, of course, because you don't want your voice to peak. And then you go, all right, I'm going to spend 10 minutes writing this poem. You spend 10 minutes writing a poem and then we'll read them to each other. Or would you kind of write them collaboratively?
There's just one we wrote collaboratively. Because we tried to sleep rough on the school roof and then... We got caught.
That's a bit of a bombshell. But
yeah, there was a group of us, and we all thought it'd be good to sleep on the school roof. But my friend's mum Claire realised. Well, we said we were sleeping at each other's houses, and then her mum twigged that she wasn't at my house, and I wasn't, you know, at her something. And so
that's pretty Hollywood stuff. That's a pretty teen movie.
She was an amazing woman. And so my mum didn't drive, so she got a taxi driver to take around trying to look for me. It was a taxi driver she knew who, he was about 4 foot and he had these jam jar glasses and he got out with a torch and he fell down a big hole, apparently.
Right, Lucy, everything you're saying to me, I can imagine you holding a card that says "Would I lie to you" on the back of it in front of you when you say it. I mean, this is absolutely ridiculous. Every time you add a new detail, I want to say lie. My answer is lie, and for you to press a buzzer and say no, it's true.
I mean,
this is ridiculous.
They have asked me to be on, but I weren't available when the dates came up.
I mean, well, you've got a perfect story, but anyone who's listened to this will know the answer. That is insane. So, okay, there's so much detail to get into here. So you are sleeping on the school roof, inexplicably. You and a few mates decide, wouldn't it be fun? Was it because it was fun to sleep rough on the school roof? Is there an element of getting one over on the school to that? Or is it just that's where you picked randomly?
Well, the thing is, that was always the plan, to meet up to sleep on it. When we got there, we were all just sort of hanging out on the field, the school field, which again, you're not allowed to do. And I do remember saying, when are we going to get up on the roof? And I don't think anyone wanted to like be the one to like, because I think once we got there, I think we all realised we didn't know how to get on the roof.
Yeah, of course. How did you get on the roof?
Well, because we never actually ended up on the roof, you see.
Oh, I see.
Some people did try, but we'd already been caught. We'd already been captured by that point, you see. Emma's dad, my friend Emma, he actually came and got us. We tried to run away from him, but we were too drunk and we fell over. So he managed to sort of round us up and we got taken home. It was a really funny night because my dad my mum and dad divorced when they were two, so he's never lived in Hull. He's not from Hull, but he was actually in the area at the time. He was, because he did spend, anyway, I'm gonna say I think he was living in Hull for a little bit over that time, but he'd not like lived with him, he didn't know how to like discipline, or like he's just not very good at that or anything. And but my mum had called him and was like, you need to get round here when she gets back. And my dad opened the door and was like, did you have a nice evening? I was like, you're not telling me off properly, you need to have a go at me. My mum was beside herself, oh god, with worry. I can't imagine what it must have been like for her.
Because you'd gone missing, but you were just in the place that you go to every single day. And then, yeah, I mean, but so I just need to delve a little bit detail wise into this taxi driver, 4 foot taxi driver with these glasses. And he is the person that she has tasked with finding her daughter. He is 4 foot, so low vantage point. He also has really thick glasses, so bad vision. And he crucially fell down a hole.
He fell down a hole. My mum told me, you know, like when my mum had recovered, like a year later when she could look back on it and laugh, because I didn't know this at the time. He got his torch out and she was going, like, let's go this way. And then she was like, where have you gone, John? And she couldn't find him. He'd disappeared.
Oh my God.
Big, down like a big hole, you know, like in shrubbery. Oh, he was a lovely, because my mum didn't drive, you see. So my mum used to always have a taxi driver that she could ring, you know, and he would come pick her up, sort of thing. Because in Hull, taxis are cheap. It only costs a fiver to get to anywhere in Hull, you know, like from one end of Hull to the other. So some trips would only be like £2 or £3, you know. But he was a lovely guy. His car stunk really bad of urine, actually. But he was lovely. And he, what he had on his dashboard, the whole of his dashboard, he had picture frames of all his family stuck on his dashboard. He couldn't. It really obstructed his view.
Yeah, of course it did. I mean, this guy's already pretty low, and he's got the big glasses, and then he's blocking his own from put frames at the top of the. Like, hang them from the top. Makes sense.
They were, like, on his dashboard. He'd stuck them, you know.
Amazing. Okay, so I believe you've got some of the poems now, right, to read me today that you wrote. Is the collaborative one in amongst the bunch?
Yeah, yeah. You see, I don't think they're funny. They're just very emotionally charged, really.
Perfect. I mean, that's what this is all about.
This is the one. So this is, we wrote. So we both got grounded. And because we slept at each other's house every night, it was a big deal because we couldn't see each other. So we were allowed a phone call after a few days with each other. So
like prison.
Yeah. So we talked. So we said, well, let's make a poem. You know, I'll write one half of the poem and you write the other half. So I wrote one half and then told her it, and she wrote the other half, and then we put them together when we were finally reunited. And I do actually remember us putting them together. I had what we had at each other's house, you know, like a chair. It was like a foam chair that when you took it out was like a little bed.
I had one of them.
Did you? They're so good to sleep on, aren't they?
Yeah. Who had that? She had that.
Both had one, yes.
Oh, right.
So
okay.
I remember when we finally reunited, I sat on there and we put our poems together and we read them as one poem.
Okay. Can we hear the poem?
It's called Freedom.
Of course it is.
Sometimes I just want to have fun and not be reminded of the things I've done, or the things I've said, or the things I've been, or being told that the things I've done are obscene. Nobody said that to us, but nobody ever said you've been obscene. But why can't life be what you want it to be, and for things to just go right for me? I can't believe that this is about sleeping on a school roof. I don't understand why we can't be free, if only we could make people see. I know these days won't last forever. I just wish something would make us happy together. I don't think I'm asking a lot from you. It's just, this is to our parents, I think. It's just the way you think and the things I do. One day things will be different. Just wait and see. Until then, we will dream of being free.
I mean, look, there are some people who have just been through it. And you're one of them. The Long Walk to Freedom by Lucy Beaumont. I mean, you talk about it as if you have literally been imprisoned for crimes you didn't commit.
Yeah,
for 50
I've experienced
years.
Incarceration.
What I like about it is that you say, I don't think I'm asking a lot from you. No. But a couple of lines earlier, you say, why can't life just be what I want it to be? Why can't everything go right for me? I mean, that is a massive, massive ask. Why can't everything go right for me?
Yeah, why can't you let me go missing for 48 hours and not say anything about it? That's what we wanted.
It is weird because you're saying such grand things like, oh, why can't life just be what I want it to be? And you kind of almost expect that to be about the system being unfair and or like even being unlucky in love, but it's literally just referring to it was we couldn't get on the roof and then we got caught and got grounded. I mean, it's just such a teenage approach to it's like that everything is the most extreme it can be. This is the worst thing that's ever happened to me. My mum and a short taxi driver who've struggled to get out of a hole found me and my dad didn't care and they got very angry and now we can't see each other. So now here's a poem called Freedom because of these punks who won't just let me live my goddamn life. Did anyone else ever see this poem? Am I the third person to hear it?
Do you know, I honestly, you might be because I don't, it was such a private thing.
And did you read it aloud? Like when you met up, did you then read it aloud?
Yeah, so Claire wrote the first bit and I wrote the second part.
Did you read your own half or did you both read it together out loud at the same time?
Gosh, I can't remember, but I don't know. I presume she would have... I think we would have really... I can imagine we would have really enjoyed hearing us read the other person's.
And now, do you have any solo work?
Yeah.
This is when you broke free from the group and you decided to go solo, Jerry Halliwell style. And I presume this next thing is going to be your Mi Chico Latino.
Yeah, this is a poem penned to Claire, to...
Right, okay, so the classic case of breaking free from the band, but only writing about the band. Okay.
And this, it is called Claire. The poem's called Claire. When times hurt you, it's not the end. The smile will grow, the heart will mend. The life you want will happen soon. Look past the stars, look past the moon. Or look nearer still, you're not alone. Your sadness is not all one tone. I'll be there, I will cure. I'm not perfect or sincere. I don't know what I mean by that. But I'll help to keep away that last tear. I do not sure, so you may not know. The love, the care, that someone adores you out there. So when you feel down and happiness you cannot see, there is someone that will love you, and that someone is me.
Oh my God, it's so touching. I mean, oh God, I would love to have received a poem like that from a friend.
This is because the lad she fancied didn't want to go out with her at that point, but he did later go out with her.
So you were right when you said the life you want will happen soon.
I knew. I was proper... What's it called?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Prophetic. Proper pathetic.
You were proper pathetic. Yeah, that's... That was a genuinely beautiful poem. There is one thing in it that hints at something a bit dark, which is... It's really nice to say the life you want will happen soon. Look past the stars, look past the moon. Absolutely beautiful. Someone will love you and that someone is me. But then just hidden in there, in all these beautiful things you're saying about friendship and about love, I am not sincere is something that you say. So this is, it does just imply this is all bollocks. I don't mean any of this. Just so you know, I know how to write nice things. Don't mean a word of it. You're on your own, Claire, for the rest of your life.
I was on like a rhyming, you know.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, it's just to rhyme. I mean, I've got that with everything I've written. It's just, oh, okay, that will rhyme with that. I don't know what it means, but pop it in. Okay, so before we continue, how many more poems do you have?
What was really lovely is that because I knew I was coming on this show, it made me like look into stuff, and I found my book, which is like, this was my leavers book, which was just basically an old exercise book that everybody graffitied.
Okay. I need to talk. There's so many things I need to talk about. We'll get to the main one, but I'll just describe. Can you just hold it up and I'll describe what I'm looking at? Okay, so in where it says name, form, subject, and there's three lines across it, you've written across all of the lines. It just says in big letters, Lucy B. Above that, in massive red letters, it says buzzing. And then it says class in this really good... like bubble writing font that looks like word art. And then there's a yes, no in boxes, which is the options to the question written above it in red. Do you like big fat dicks? Now, please explain.
It was just like, the front cover so represents the energy of the school. It's just like, apart from the top set lessons, which were normal and, you know, like nationally normal behaviour, like all the other lessons were just chaos. You know, kids were, a lot of the teachers ended up being like supply teachers and, you know, it just chaos, you know, where the pupils like completely sort of dominated the staff, you know.
Right.
And I worked in Hull School, so that was normal. And it wasn't until I worked in schools outside of Hull that I was like, oh, fucking hell, it didn't need to be like this. It's not like this everywhere. Like, people have, like, leavers balls and actually, like, leavers books that are actually printed properly. Like, we didn't get that. We were allowed to write on our T-shirt and everyone signed each other's T-shirt. But what has been really interesting, because...
Sorry, Lucy, I just got to stop you. I really feel like you've dodged the do you like big fat dicks question here.
I put yes, but I think, to be honest, I can remember thinking that I didn't know dicks could be fat. I didn't think yeah. dicks put weight on, yeah. but I did it anyway. I didn't understand like about girth or anything then, either. Like, I didn't understand about that. I think I just instinctively knew that probably would be the better of a dick, like that a big fat dick would probably like a big fat dick.
So, but why? Where, if you didn't even know about this, where did this question come from? So you asked yourself this question.
Oh no, I didn't write this. Someone else wrote it.
Someone wrote it on your book and then made you answer it, and you answered yes. You correctly identified the answer as yes. And who is Leanne Love? Because it says Leanne Love on that book.
She just a girl that I was at school who is now a police officer. Yeah. What do you know? What was really lovely and really and quite sad? So, like, throughout school, the social groups and the status didn't really change. Like, if you were in the middle tier that I was in, maybe one or two might have ended up drifting upwards or below, but mostly everyone stayed, like everyone sort of knew their place. And then in the last year, it was like people like let go a bit and realised we could all like hang around together, and this amazing thing happened. It was like, oh, we're all the same. And I had, so Claire, I've told you about, I give her a 15th or 16th birthday party, surprise party at my house, which was a ridiculous thing to do because it was just me, you know, she was a single mum. We lived in like a really tiny terrace, you know, like those old Victorian two up, two down, tiny. And I just to think that I could host a birthday party for her because my mum was away, that's why I did it. And it was gatecrash, the whole year group turned up basically. And the police ended up coming, and like someone brought a for sale sign in from the house from down the street. And Claire didn't even get to see her cake because by the time she arrived, someone's head had been put in it. What's lovely is that all the way through this book, people have said, oh, like, brilliant party. And I forgot how many people came. And I also forgot people who I'd never really talked to. Came and had a really good time, like, and I think there was like it was the first, like, there'd only been one or two parties like that, you know. And I think people came away thinking, oh, we should have done more, we should have trashed more houses,
yeah. We should have ruined more lives.
And what I love the most is on the first page, the only one that's neat is from someone I don't know who it is. Alison, someone I don't know. There was not an Alison in the school. She seems to know me really well.
Well, you know what? If there was not, you should be Derek Acora. If you're getting notes in your thing from people who don't exist, there wasn't an Alison in the school. I've not heard that name for 500 years. The party thing definitely is a massive impact. I mean, there wasn't a party when I was growing up that wasn't gatecrashed by, and it would get us out of hand, people from other schools and people from, like, not even from the town. Would come, like, because the girls would go out at a certain age, would go out with older boys a couple of years older who had cars or a moped or something, they'd be from like the neighboring town, and we wouldn't even really know them. There'd be a couple of boys who'd played football against them who would know them, but they would turn up, and they were always, like, you know, much scarier than anyone we knew or was just technically in our year group. So it was always weird when someone from another school came and gatecrashed, let alone someone who had driven there. when we were kids to a party, and just everything would get ruined. Like the amount of glass tables I remember just smashing in front of my eyes because everyone was sat on it or something. It was ridiculous. Once at a party, there was a boy who I remember was just snapping DVDs. He was just opening DVDs and just snapping them and chucking them on the floor.
Kill him, wouldn't you?
It was ridiculous.
Oh, that's so awful.
Yeah, there's just no need. So this is your book. Is this your Leavers book then?
Yeah, and I've put, lots of messages in here. Goodbye to all, I've put a poem in here that no one read. Goodbye to all my friends I've come to love and know. We've had some really good times, but now we have to go. Although this school is crap and my lessons are really bad, it's the friends I'm leaving behind that make me really sad.
It's very sweet, but just very good to just get a little dig in there. The school is crap, the lessons are bad, but overall, I'll miss you. Very nice.
Yeah, so it was the friends, really, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's clear. All your poems are just very... Like, the first poem is about wanting the freedom to be able to see your friend. The second poem is about how you love your friend. And then the third poem is about how you'll miss all your new friends. So clearly, friends were something that massively dominated your life. Now, it comes to the point where I must score your work. On three categories. Those categories are originality, pure teen horniness, and Mickey Mouse Club / Ryan Gosling Ryan Goose score, which is how close is it to your work now? How much potential does it show for the future star we all know that you went on to become? So first of all, originality. It's the first poem, the Freedom poem. I do think it's extremely original to write a collaborative poem as a teenager with another teenager and then put them together and then read them out. I think that's insanely original. I've never heard of that before. But the level of making this an extreme thing, like you've been through something so much bigger than you have as a teenager, is so teenage. Making it the long road to freedom when all you were was grounded because you did something wrong is just so and saying a phrase like, why can't life just be what I want it to be, god mom, is like, you know, you can imagine that being said. But the poem to Claire is such an emotionally intelligent thing to write as a teenager, to not be embarrassed about and to be able to express yourself in that way, and look past the stars, look past the moon. It's like Frank Sinatra. It's so beautiful. And to just put in the little subtle hint that I'm not being sincere. I think originality, I will go for a 4 out of 5 for originality. Then we're on to pure teen horniness. Now, the poems are not particular. They're all about friendship. So the poems themselves, I'd say, exhibit almost no horniness whatsoever. They're very earnest.
Do you know why I never ever wrote anything, and I never have done, is because I found a poem my mum had written that was so sexually charged about a night of passion she had that it made me never ever want to write about anything sexual ever again.
Well, I will have to invite your mum onto this podcast because I want to hear the poem. Well, it would be a 0 for pure teen horniness, but you did answer yes when asked, do you like big fat dicks? So, and that was based, what makes it hornier is that it was based purely on instinct. It was not based on information. So I will give you a 2 out of 5 for that. And then finally, Mickey Mouse Club.
If you put weight on, does it go on you?
No, I don't think it. I don't.
At all, if doesn't it?
Were a dick to become fat, I don't think it would be because of that. I think it just is naturally girthy, or it isn't. Imagine that, though, just someone going, oh, the problem I've got is that, you know, everything I eat just goes straight to my dick. It's such a shame. okay, Mickey Mouse Club, Ryan Gosling, Ryan Goose score. How close is it to your work now? Does it show potential for who you are? I don't think so. I mean, I don't know how you feel about it. It doesn't feel like it to me. I've never heard you say something like, you know, look past the stars in what I've seen you do. No, it's more the anecdotes. That everything anecdotally is like, yes, it makes perfect sense. But the work doesn't connect to it. And I don't think you would be this earnest in anything you did now. No. I don't think you would put, like, it's just so nice. Everything you've done this, I'm not saying your act isn't nice, but it's like, it's not funny, is it, to just go, I love my friends.
No, none of it's funny. I didn't even think that I could be that, yeah, that one a thing, yeah.
But there's one element that's going to get you a one, which is you couldn't resist in your Leavers poem, though you're saying, oh, I've made some great friends and it's been a great journey and we're all emotional and it's sincere and it's over. You still said, the school is crap and the lessons are bad. You couldn't resist just throwing that in there, which is the sort of undercutting of things that I've seen from you. So I'll give you 1 out of 5 for that, which means that you score a 7 total out of 15. A very respectable early work score.
Yeah, I'm happy with that. Thank you.
And now, in order to level the playing field, as ever, I must read you something I wrote, some early work of mine. This is a poem. I wrote it when I was 17. It is called Chase. Okay, you ready? Chase. I lost my mind at the cinema. If apologies came in a textbook dilemma, I'd be sorry. It would seem that you're in a hurry as you dismiss me with a mascara stain, your eyes locked on my face. I wish you'd whisper my name, and then I'd only sing back yours, Grace. I told you I took you for granted, but it turns out those messages aren't in your inbox for long. Delete me from your phone and I'm gone. Like a holiday romance you'd leave on the plane. This ever romance, an affectionate dame, and a cheap grumpy duke who by major belief only got you by fluke. If only the fourth had gone better. Take it or leave it, I'd never forget turning towards her. First night till time I ignored her. Alone I ponder the last minute chance to acknowledge desire in advance. She now looks through me and not with a glance, decides with her eyes that we know not romance. Cease. There we go.
Did you just go Northern for the romance bit?
Well, that's the thing, is because it's meant to be... Well, I'm not going to say romance. So it's obviously the rhyme. It's like an old Shakespearean rhyme where it doesn't rhyme. But it's like... It goes glance, dance, advance, chance, and then the last word is romance. But it's not romance, is it?
Oh, yeah,
but that,
yeah.
So, like, in writing, it should be that. But obviously, I was like, no, I'm going to say romance.
That's brilliant. The thing I like is you actually got into that.
Oh, yeah, I'm always going to. I feel it. All the way through, I feel it. Some things you may not have picked up on. It starts with the word chase and cease. I mean, I make it pretty clear in this that it's about someone called Grace. And so chase is there because it rhymes with Grace and cease is there because it rhymes with Reese.
Oh, and is she real? Was she a real person?
Yeah.
Was her mascara actually smeared?
Yeah, well, she dumped me on New Year's Eve and was crying on my face.
She was crying on your face?
Yeah, and then a taxi, I was going to stay at this house where we were having this New Year's Eve party, and then it was like a house with a really long, like almost grass driveway, like gravel and stuff, driveway that was like properly like gated house in this fucking wealthy person's manor or whatever. And then I had to get this taxi on my own on New Year's Eve at 17, which obviously cost a fortune anyway. But it was a big like 4x4 taxi, and it got stuck in the mud because it was raining. And I had to help this taxi driver push this taxi out after I'd just been dumped on New Year's Eve. It took ages. Yeah, it was so bleak.
There's nothing to take the piss out of before. I thought that was really good.
It's a bit, you know, there's some...
It's a rap, isn't it? Was you doing rapping? Was you trying to do rapping?
Probably. I was probably writing raps. I wasn't doing rapping, but I was probably writing rap lyrics. Yeah, if I was, you know... Bear in mind how much I talked about 8 Mile earlier. I can imagine I was pretty into stuff like that. I don't know. I guess it's all quite specific. I mean, it's very modern, isn't it? Delete me from your phone and I'm gone. Those messages aren't in your inbox for long.
Yeah. If you did that with a Liverpudlian accent, it'd sound a lot better. I think because you assimilate your voice with something that's like, you know, intellectual. Sort of, it's, I think if you do that with a dialect, people will be like, that's really good.
Do you think I could actually get out there on the open mics and people would click their fingers at me and go, oh yeah, I'm feeling it.
Definitely, yeah.
I need you to score that piece of work on the same categories. So the first one is originality out of five.
Two.
Come on, talk us through it. Why have I lost points?
Originality. I mean, you know, I've heard better from people of similar ages.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there were some quite modernistic. For you've got to remember, because we shouldn't be judging it by today's standards, should we? We should be judging it. And actually, then, like you say, there was some really modern. There was stuff that. Do you remember that band Five?
Yeah. This is the first time I've been compared to Five, actually. So you think I had some Five-esque lines in there, do you?
Yeah, I think you were like a young Pete Waterman. I think you could have produced Five's music at 17. It's hard to say. I'll give you a three.
It's okay. Two, no, you can stick with two. I just need to know.
Two was it was quite. I'll give you a 3.5.
Okay, I'll take a 3. Let's be reasonable. And then it's pure teen horniness is the next category.
Well, there's each charge, isn't it? You can feel each charge. You start saying. I mean, did you even know you were maybe saying we could have had a lot of good sex if we were?
There is a line, isn't there? I only noticed it as I was reading it out. There was a line that was to acknowledge desire and advance.
Yeah, but then you would need quite a few years to be able to have good sex. No one had good sex when they were teenagers.
Oh yeah, God. I mean, I didn't have any. At this stage.
Oh well, then yeah, but there's horny. You can feel the horniness in there. Four for that, you know.
Yeah, I would agree. It's pretty gutted that I basically feel like it's pretty gutted that I got dumped before we could acknowledge desire. I think what I'm saying in that.
Definitely. Okay. Yeah, you can feel that. There's a slickness to it, which is it's good. It's good.
And then finally, it's the Mickey Mouse Club score. Ryan Gosling, Ryan Goose. The potential it shows for. My work now, how close is it?
Well, no. I mean, you're a really good comedian. you're a really good comedian, aren't you? But then again, you're good at being to make you think you're on the back foot, and then you're good at blindsiding. You know what I mean? You're good at skewering things, and I don't think that's particularly that skewered. Or on the pot, it's not particularly on the nose, is it? Or particularly charged? So I don't really think. I think you've really developed.
Thank you. Thank God for that. A lot of people come on this and say that might as well have been in your last show.
Aww.
I mean, because I occasionally have done like poemy things in old shows of mine from a few years ago. So people who've seen those go, Reese. I mean, I'm sure I saw you do that at the Soho Theatre when I read a poem as bad as that. And it's very upsetting. So thank you for saying that I've developed into something much, much better than that. So what's the score out of 5?
Three again.
3? It's still as high as 3? All right, I'll take it. Okay, so that means I get 10. 10 out of 15, which means technically I win the episode. Although, as ever, Lucy, the message on this podcast is that we are both losers. That's the whole point. And now it comes to the time for you to play us out. One final piece. We will produce it up. Our producer Neil will put music, sound effects, whatever's relevant underneath it to make it into the big performance piece that your teenage self would have wanted.
This is poem to the first love of my life when I was at school. It's called The Boy with the Crystal Eyes. You look at me with those piercing eyes and that smile that elevates your ears. And I wonder if my dream came true, those lips would bring me tears. And I tell myself you're different now, all mature and right wise. And I feel as though I could give my life to the boy with the crystal eyes. Laughter fills my soul and you make me shine. But opposite lives make opposite friends and I'm still waiting for that sign. We laugh and smile and touch and then you go and I'm left alone. Then my world comes back and the memories too. And I stand from a distance just looking at you. You're not perfect, but there's something kind and frightened inside. It will never happen unless you really tried. And I tell myself you're different now, all mature and wise. And I feel as though I could give my life to the boy with the crystal eyes. March 98 by Lucy Ann Louise Beaumont. I've made up a second name for myself. That doesn't exist.
Oh, it was so... Do you know what? That poem... is so good, and it's such a wonderful poem and an impressive poem, and I was so ready to clap and then go, oh my God, it's actually brilliant. That's such a good poem. And then you've made up a name.
You've rounded it off. Beaumont.
Why have you done that?
I've never done it since or before.
Are you trying to give yourself gravitas, do you think, as a poet?
God knows, but my name is Lucy Anne Beaumont. I've made up Louise. Is it a good poem?
It's really good. I mean, I really like the chorus, essentially, the fact that it comes back more mature and wise. The Boy with the Crystal Eyes. The Boy with the Crystal Eyes is a great title. It sounds like a Smiths song. And a smile that elevates your ears is like the imagery in that for a kid, essentially, is like to notice. You're noticing things that are far beyond what you notice as someone writing a poem as a teenager.
Or I've copied off.
Or you nicked it. Yeah, or you just absolutely nicked it. Oh, it's a Sylvia Plath line, is it? There we go. That was Lucy Beaumont on Early Work. What an absolute treat. I remember at the time thinking that was an absolute gold episode. Now, breaking news. Lucy actually is on Would I Lie to You, finally, on the 17th of February. I googled it, and it turns out that it's happening. So you can watch it. Maybe she'll tell the taxi driver's story about the frames on his dashboard and the glasses falling down a hole. Who knows? Also, she has a TV show with her husband, John Richardson. Odd Couples. It's on Channel 4 on Fridays. But ultimately, I think she should give up and be a poet, because I wonder if my dreams came true, those lips would bring me tears, is one of the most beautiful sentences I've ever heard in fiction or real life. Absolutely sensational. She should do that. I should become Derek Cora. But all of us should subscribe to this podcast. I don't even think you can anymore. Follow the podcast. Come see me on tour if you like, and I will see you next time. Goodbye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.